Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Well, in bed is often a place of discord for couples. Everything from snoring to involuntary leg kicking, people talking in their sleep, insomnia, people trying to work in bed while their partner sleeps. All of this can be a source of not just tension in a relationship, but also cause a lack of sleep and associated health and other problems within the couple. Joining us from RAND is both a sleep researcher and a clinician, Wendy Troxell, author of Sharing the Covers, Every Couple's Guide to Better Sleep. Wendy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Wendy, if we can get you a little closer to your microphone or mouthpiece, you sound a little echoey and distant for us. Let's start, first of all, with the degree to which people are having their sleep disrupted within relationships. How prevalent is this?
You know, we're just beginning to look at sleep in a social context. Because that's how it occurs for most adults. So we're still learning about how frequent it is that one sleep is affected by a bed partner. But what we know from laboratory studies is that about a third of couples' sleep is interdependent. That is, one partner's movement affects the other bed partner. And I can certainly say clinically, I see this all the time, that one partner will come in complaining of insomnia and swear that if only her husband would stop snoring, she could finally get the sleep she desperately needs. It's not always the case that it is entirely the partner's fault, but a partner's sleep habits and their patterns do have a big impact on how the other partner is going to sleep.
We'll continue with Wendy Troxell, author of Sharing the Covers, Every Couple's Guide to Better Sleep. We'll try and get our audio worked out a little bit so we have a better connection with her. But I'd like to hear from you. What sorts of sleep challenges do you face with your partner? And if you've successfully met the challenge, want to hear your advice for others? If you want the advice of our expert, Wendy Troxell, you can call us right now, 866-893-KPECC, the AirTalk page, kpecc.org, tweet at AirTalk, or post on the AirTalk Facebook page. We'll be back in just 90 seconds. Los Angeles County has now qualified for the far less restrictive yellow level of COVID-19. The county health department has not yet released the official public health order, but is expected to do so. When it does, it would allow indoor bars to reopen, larger crowds at Dodger Stadium, expanded restaurant capacity, expanded movie theater and amusement park capacity, gyms and other establishments. We'll await update on this throughout the day right here on 89.3 KPECC. But again, Los Angeles County has qualified at the state level for entering the yellow tier because for a week it's been at the lower level of COVID-19 cases. So we are awaiting confirmation from the county health department that it will allow the reopenings and expansion of capacity at many of these businesses. Right now, we're talking with RAND Corporation senior behavioral scientist Wendy Troxell, who works with clients on sleep troubles within relationships and also researches it. Her new book is titled Sharing the Covers, Every Couple's Guide to Better Sleep. Let's talk about separate beds for those who have that option of sleeping apart. When does it make sense to give up because the sleep problem is so severe it's best just to sleep separately?
Yeah, this is becoming an increasingly common scenario. I think as some of the taboo attached to the idea of sleeping apart begins to fade away, more and more couples are considering this as an option. Now, rather than thinking when it's the most important, when it's the time to do this, I think it's more important to think about how couples could have the conversation about whether it makes sense for them to sleep apart. Because there's a number of reasons why this might be an option for some couples. Maybe it is a sleep disorder in one of the partners, or maybe it's that the couple operates on different sleep-wake schedules, either due to intrinsic differences, one's a morning lark, the other's an evening owl, or maybe one's a shift worker, so their sleep schedules are simply incompatible. So what I'd like to say, it's really about how couples go about having this conversation so that there is actually a conversation around it, not just an exercise of desperation, which too often happens when one member of the couple just goes stomping out of the bedroom in frustration because they can't get the sleep they need. What I want couples to do is learn to have a dialogue around what's working and what's not working in the bedroom, and then think about lots of strategies that could potentially work for them.
You know, one of the challenges couples face is sleeping in very different schedules because their circadian rhythms are different. My wife is a naturally early to bed, early to rise. When I'm not working, I have to get up early to host this program, but when I'm not working, I'm late to bed, late to rise, sure, you know, like theater person kind of hours. And so that means I have to be, you know, very quiet when I come to bed because I don't want to disturb her. She has to be very quiet when she gets up in the morning on weekends because I'm sleeping later typically. But what other sorts of advice do you have to help people who sleep on different schedules?
My advice for people who are on different schedules is to remember that sometimes the most important time for couples to share in bed is the time before one of the partners falls asleep. So if you're on different schedules, you know, she's a morning lark up at the crack of dawn and you on your natural schedule are more of an evening owl, share that pre-bedtime ritual together before she falls asleep. And then you can get out of bed and go, you know, go about your evening in a relaxing way and return to bed at your more natural sleep time. Because what happens too frequently is when you have mismatched pairs, you know, one partner's rhythm kind of drives the show. So let's say the morning lark who wants to go to bed by 10 p.m., that becomes the couple's bedtime. Now, the evening owl, a 10 p.m. bedtime might just not be physiologically compatible with their internal rhythm. So they end up lying there in bed, frustrated, staring at the ceiling because they can't fall asleep, because it's not their physiological bedtime yet. So again, couples can share the time in bed before one partner goes to sleep, and then the later partner can go to bed at a later time. And in the morning lark can quietly get out of bed, go about their day, and maybe bring coffee to the later sleeping partner when it's time for their wake up.
Sue in Hollywood, great to have you with us. Your question for Wendy Troxell, author of Sharing the Covers.
Hey, yes. Hi, Larry. Hi, Amanda. What happens with me and my partner is he likes the room to be very cold when he sleeps. He had a background of camping and whatnot, and I like the room to be not hot, but warm, you know, comfortable. And so what we've been doing is he has the windows open and the fan blowing. Even now, I don't think it's that hot yet, but he's doing that to chill it off, and I'm under piles of blankets. And then I continually wake up in the night because I'm sweating, kick the blankets off for a little while, then I'm freezing, then put them back on. So it's breaking my sleep up.
Yeah.
I wondered if there were any suggestions.
I picture you just buried under layer and layer of things to keep you warm there, Sue. No fun at all. Wendy Troxell?
Well, that's a great point because couples do have differences in temperature preferences. Now, I will say that generally speaking, you want your bedroom to be cool at night because lower temperatures facilitate our body's ability to fall into sleep, because that's one of the primary cues that happens internally when our body slips into sleep. That said, we all have sort of intrinsic differences in our temperature preferences, and your husband likes it cooler than you do. So there are some strategies that you can do. I do recommend sort of layering up with covers that you can sort of kick off as the night goes on. You can also have different bedding for you and your partner. This is sort of the Scandinavian method. Even in a king-size bed, you can have different bedding for both of you. There's now even great technologies out there with various mattresses and mattress pads that allow for individualized temperature control for each side of the bed. So these are some of the practical strategies that you can do to kind of individualize your temperature preferences. But remember that we all tend to sleep better when it's a little cooler than comfortable at bedtime. So somewhere around 65 to 68 degrees is actually the recommended temperature for the bedroom at bedtime.
All right, Sue, we wish you the best. Thank you so much. Aaron on our Facebook page writes, my partner leaves for work earlier than I get up. He sets his alarm an hour early and snoozes for an entire miserable hour. Of course, he falls right back asleep in 10 seconds or less. But I just lay there awake for an hour and listen to an alarm every 10 minutes. He has trouble waking up, so I don't want to push the issue. I just wish there was a happy medium. Aaron, I know you're speaking for many listeners with that one. What do you recommend, Wendy?
I love that comment. Here's where it gets to my recommendation that, you know, we live in a culture in general that tends to undermine the importance of sleep, and we practice some not so healthy sleep behaviors, including hitting the snooze button over and over again, which, by the way, is not enhancing the quality of your sleep, because every 7 minutes of short snippets of sleep is not good quality sleep. But what I like to say is, if your partner's not going to do it for himself, then do it for you so that both of your sleep quality can improve. And I think you can tell them that the expert says that those 7 minute snippets of sleep in between the snooze are not the deep refreshing sleep that really benefit our waking hours. So rather than hitting the snooze for multiple times until the final awakening, the alarm should go off at the time of your final awakening and stick to it. And when that alarm goes off, the best strategy is to make it a rapid awakening. It's sort of like ripping off a Band-Aid. You know, we don't benefit from sort of prolonging the inevitable. It just prolongs the agony. So the second the alarm goes off, feet hit the floor, throw the covers off, and get up. And try to do something relatively physically active pretty quickly, even holding a plank or a couple jumping jacks. If you're really struggling to shake the cobwebs off in the morning, those are some great strategies to do first thing.
Are there any generalized gender-based differences in how we sleep, or is it so individualized we don't see those patterns?
We do see both gender and biological sex differences in sleep. And what's interesting is that men and women do sleep differently. Women, for instance, are more prone to insomnia, which is the clinical disorder characterized by a difficulty falling asleep, difficulty staying asleep, or just poor non-refreshing sleep quality. Men, on the other hand, are more likely to have other types of sleep disorders, such as sleep apnea, which the primary symptom of sleep apnea includes snoring. So among heterosexual couples, this particular sex difference can be particularly problematic because you pair the female sex, who's more prone to sort of poor quality light sleep, with the male sex, who's more prone to loud sleep, and some problems can emerge.
This is a bad fit.
Differences as well. Yes. It can become the bane of many couples' existence, for sure.
We'll continue our conversation with RAND Corporation researcher, as well as sleep clinician, Wendy Troxell. Her book, Sharing the Covers, Every Couple's Guide to Better Sleep. We're taking your calls at 866-893-KPECC. Sean in Highland Park writes on the Facebook page, my partner and I decided to have separate bedrooms a few months ago, and we both sleep so much better. It's truly wonderful for us. Now when we sleep together, it's a bit more special and exciting, like a sleepover. We'll be back in 1 minute on Air Talk. We're talking about sleep in relationships and some of the challenges couples face with sleep patterns, sleep behaviors. We're at 866-893-KPCC. You can tweet at Air Talk or post on the Air Talk Facebook page. Wendy Troxell is author of Sharing the Covers, Every Couple's Guide to Better Sleep. You'd mentioned snoring and sleep apnea. Short of the snorer getting a CPAP for when that's described, you have any other advice for how to cope with snoring in a relationship?
Yeah, so my first recommendation is certainly, you know, snoring can be more than just a nuisance. It can be a symptom of a significant sleep disorder, sleep apnea. So, you know, as a partner, you can encourage your partner to seek treatment and first rule that out. But short of getting treated for sleep apnea, there are other practical strategies that couples can engage in. Trying different types of earplugs. They're not all the same, and you really need to find the one that works for you. That can help block some of the noise. Using other noise machines or having some white noise, so it's a bit sort of draws attention away from the freight train next to you. For some couples, if the snoring is so bad, separate beds can be the best solution. Because what you don't want to have happen is that so much resentment builds when you feel that somebody else is robbing you of your sleep. And what we also know from the research is that when we're poorly slept, we simply can't be the best partners we want to be because sleep deprivation really can compromise our relationship functioning. So that is another strategy that couples do consider. And for some, it's the best way to maintain their relationship so that they don't both suffer from sleep deprivation.
You have a chapter in the book, Room for More, and I raise that because it's related to this tweet from Tracy, who tweets at Air Talk. I sleep with my husband, a 60-pound golden retriever, an aging beagle who has to go out throughout the night, and a cat who joins us around 5 a.m. I solve the problem of sleep by not doing it anymore. So Tracy's got an extreme case of additional living things in the bed.
Yes. So in my book, in the chapter Room for More, I talk both about the little ones who might creep into your bed in the middle of the night, including the human kind, as well as the furry kind, recognizing the parents of pets. Now, what we know about pets is they, like humans, also can twitch and toss and turn and snore at night. There's also pet dander, which can interfere with breathing at night. And for many, even who don't normally experience allergies, the dander from pets can interfere with good quality sleep. That said, there is something about sleep that I also talk about in my book that's so beautiful about sleep, that it's this really vulnerable place we're in. And that's why so many of us do prefer to sleep with a partner, sleep with our pets, even sleep with our children, because that sense of safety and comfort might override the occasional toss and turning or the snoring of the pets. But it's really important, if you're sacrificing your sleep just to all be together, well, that's probably not the best strategy for, you know, you to be the best parent for your pets or partner in your relationship. So you really want to think about how much you're all benefiting from the shared sleep experience and how much you're sacrificing in terms of your sleep, and then find strategies within there. Maybe the pets at least sleep on the floor to avoid some of the displacement caused by them moving around in the bed, because that sounds like a pretty crowded bed.
It sounds very, even if it's king size, that's crowded.
Yes.
Particularly that 60-pound golden retriever. Bria writes on the Air Talk Facebook page, my Apple Watch has been so helpful with this. I wake up several hours before my boyfriend, and I started using my watch as an alarm so it buzzes me awake without waking him. That's Bria writing on the Facebook page. I do want to talk a bit about your last chapter where you talk about the couple negotiating sleep, negotiating the night, as you call it. What are some of the things to keep in mind, particularly since this can be an emotionally fraught conversation? It can, you know, end up going places that might be hurtful to one or both. How do you recommend this be framed?
You're right. It really does matter how we approach these conversations. And we don't have great tools out there because, you know, sleep has been this thing that we've neglected to consider as a critical part of our relationship until now. And this is one of the major drivers of my book. Now, when you think about it, we spend about one third of our lives asleep. So that's proportionally a major part of our coupled existence. And yet, you know, we really don't talk about it too much. So I really do encourage couples, and in my book, I have a number of strategies and exercises to help facilitate couples having these types of conversations. So some kind of gentler, soft ways to start the conversations is to start talking about kind of your beliefs and expectations about sleep. How much sleep do you think you need? Kind of how was your sleep in your family of origin? Did your parents sleep together? Did you share a room with a sibling? These kind of things are informative in terms of kind of how we develop our own ideas about sort of what's normal and what works when it comes to the sleep experience. And then I really encourage couples to take the time to share both of their experiences as to what's working and what's not working when it comes to the bedroom. And this is not just about sex. This time, we're really talking about sleep and using open and honest communication, listening to each other, and really approaching the conversation from the perspective that this is important for us as a couple, that this is really a we discussion. This is not about you are doing this and you're doing that and it's interfering with my sleep. This is really about how do we together approach this critical third of our lives in a way that we can optimize sleep quality for both of us. So instead of it being a discussion with a lot of finger wagging or blaming, where one partner can feel hurt, defensive, even rejected, it's really about, wow, sleep is so important for us to behave our best. So we need to do this for the health of our relationship. So let's problem solve around this. So it's really about sort of forging a sleep alliance rather than talking about any sort of sleep divorce or any kind of issue that would make one partner feel abandoned and hurt. That's where problems can emerge.
I'm so glad you got onto this issue of sleeping from a couple's perspective, because so much of the research we see on sleep are individuals, as you point out, in laboratories, and it's not this kind of negotiating it among two people in the real world. Wendy Troxell, sharing the covers, Every Couple's Guide to Better Sleep. Thank you so much for joining us. Also, we have this important news item, that fire which gutted the San Gabriel Mission July 11th of last year. A 57-year-old man has been arrested on multiple felony counts, including arson of an inhabited structure in relation to the fire that destroyed the rooftop and most of the interior of the San Gabriel Mission. There'll be more details coming up at 1 o'clock on All Things Considered this afternoon. From all of us at Air Talk, have a great rest of your day. Fresh Air with Terry Gross is next.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.